This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at the top stories at the end of the week and the health care bill back in the news during a very busy time here in Washington over the past few days. Right now, the House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer says negotiations are going well between the House and Senate, and he thinks a final compromise version could be done within the next few days.
I would certainly hope that within the next 24, 48, 72 hours that we have a general agreement between the Senate and the House.
That was on CNBC, but one of the issues that has apparently helped this process move towards a final compromise bill has more and more people outraged. They see it as the latest incident of special deals that just make this whole political process look very shady. This one benefiting big labor. As you'll recall, there was a big debate, difference between the House and Senate over whether or not to tax the so-called Cadillac health care plans. Those are health care plans that cost either more than $9,000 for individuals or $24,000 per family. The House didn't tax them at all. The Senate has a 40% excise tax on them, and the House didn't do it out of deference to big labor. Now, the compromise is that the excise tax stays, except for members of organized labor. For more insight on this, head to worldnetdaily.com or dateline.radioamerica.org, and you can hear my interview with Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute, one of the most knowledgeable people you'll ever find on the health care debate. Meanwhile, the 60th vote in favor of health care in the Senate could be a bit wobbly in the next few days. That's because a new poll out of Massachusetts shows the Republican candidate there, State Senator Scott Brown, with a 4-point lead over Democratic Attorney General Martha Coakley, who was supposed to coast to an easy win and take the seat of the late Senator Ted Kennedy. And Brown has said and has made it a staple of his campaign that he will be the 41st vote against the Democratic version of this legislation. Coakley has had a bad week. First of all, in the debate on Monday night, she claimed that no terrorists were left in Afghanistan. Then some of her entourage roughed up some reporters here in Washington during a fundraiser on Tuesday. Later, Coakley defended her campaign tactics by saying she would rather meet with Democratic activists who know a lot of people than stand outside in the cold shaking hands near Fenway Park like Scott Brown was doing. Then late in the week, Coakley got in trouble, especially among Catholics, during an interview with Ken Pittman on WBSM Radio. Among many other topics asked about by Pittman, he asked what Attorney General Coakley thought about the Conscience Clause, which in many states allows physicians to refuse certain treatments, specifically abortion, if they have a moral or religious objection. Here's what Coakley said.
I would not pass a bill, as Scott Brown filed an amendment, to say that if people believe that they don't want to provide services that are required under the law and under Roe v. Wade, that they can individually decide to not follow the law. The answer to that question is no.
Pittman then followed up with a conversation that ended with Coakley suggesting that those who have moral or religious objections to abortion don't belong in the ER.
If you're a Catholic and you believe what the Pope teaches, any form of birth control is a sin, you don't want to do that.
I know, but we have a separation of church and state here, Ken. Let's be clear.
Right? Yeah, but in the emergency room, you still have your religious freedom.
The law says that people are allowed to have that. And so then if you can have religious freedom, you probably shouldn't work in the emergency room.
Wow. Okay.
Tuesday is election day in Massachusetts. Massachusetts Democratic Congressman Barney Frank says if Brown wins, health care, at least the Democratic version of it, is dead. For more on the Massachusetts Senate race, head to worldnetdaily.com or dateline.radioamerica.org. Two interviews on that today. First of all, on this whole issue of the Conscience Clause, you'll hear my interview with Dr. Donna Harrison of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and she has plenty to say about that issue. As for the overall politics of the race, you can catch my chat with Susan Ferriccio. She is the chief congressional correspondent for the Washington Examiner up there in Boston covering the campaign. Back here in Washington, the first major review of the Fort Hood shooting tragedy is in, and Defense Secretary Robert Gates is talking about it. He says the report, which was spearheaded by former Secretary of the Army Togo West and former Navy Admiral Vern Clark, talked about several different areas. First of all, the good news. He says the first responders at Fort Hood reacted splendidly.
The report concludes that the initial response at Fort Hood to the incident was prompt and effective. Leaders had anticipated mass casualty events in their emergency response plans and exercises, and base personnel were prepared to take appropriate and decisive actions to secure the situation. The first responders deserve recognition for the efforts that prevented an awful situation from becoming even worse.
But Secretary Gates says there are deficiencies, including the apparent inability of the military to do a good job of rooting out radicals within their own ranks.
In particular, the review concluded the DOD force protection programs are not properly focused on internal threats such as workplace violence and self-radicalization. The problem is compounded in the absence of a clear understanding of what motivates a person to become radicalized and commit violent acts.
As has been documented over the past couple of months since the shooting, there were plenty of warning signs about Major Nidal Malik Hassan. Secretary Gates says that the report recommends, and he is forwarding on those recommendations, that several officers be reprimanded.
First of all, because it remains an active investigation, criminal investigation, I can't address the specifics of the Major Hassan case at this time. The report does include accountability recommendations involving Army personnel responsible for supervising Major Hassan. And I have forwarded those recommendations to Secretary of the Army John McHugh and directed him to take appropriate action.
Plenty of U.S. forces on the way to Haiti if they're not already there. The USS Carl Vinson has already docked in Haiti. A Marine Expeditionary Unit is on the way, and different Coast Guard vessels and personnel are also being deployed to the area. The president once again on Friday heading before the television cameras to remind us all that help is on the way and will keep coming.
And as the international community continues to respond, I do believe that America has a continued responsibility to act. Our nation has a unique capacity to reach out quickly and broadly and to deliver assistance that can save lives. That responsibility obviously is magnified when the devastation that's been suffered is so near to us.
So what exactly do the troops do down there? How is it different from what they've been normally trained to do? And what should U.S. commanders make sure our troops aren't tasked with doing while they're down there? For answers to all those questions and more, head to, again, worldnetdaily.com or dateline.radioamerica.org and hear my interview with retired U.S. Air Force General Tom McInerney, who was in charge of the Exxon Valdez cleanup in Alaska. He was also a key figure in the recovery effort following Hurricane Andrew in South Florida in 1992. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.